Welcome to the Cloquet Vineyard. To find out more of who we are, go to cloquetvineyard.org. Thanks for listening and have a good and beautiful day. We are going to start a brand new series today, and to kick it off, I would love to read a poem by Wendell Berry. I love it. I think we even have it on the screen. It's called A Meeting in Part. In a dream, I meet my dead friend. He has, I know, gone long and far, and yet he is the same, for the dead are changeless. They grow no older. It is I who have changed, grown strange to what I was. Yet I, the changed one, ask, how you been? He grins and looks at me. I've been eating peaches off some mighty fine trees. I love that poem. My buddy Kyle sent this to me. He'll randomly send me poems because I've started reading a lot more poetry in the past year. And I've been, when I discovered the power and the depth of what poetry does, like in me, in my spirit, it has been one of the most life-giving discoveries for like my emotional health, my spiritual health. I loved it. And when I read this the first time, I cried, right? And me being the high feeler, right? My kids always ask me, Dad, are you going to cry at this movie before we walk in? I'm like, yeah, it's going to happen. Incredibles 2, yeah, I'm going to cry the whole time. So, but there's something beautiful about poetry, because poetry, you have to read differently than if you're going to read an owner's manual, right? You can't, poetry is not always meant to have these literal truths, to have all these facts. That poetry, part of poetry is that it's going to have like multiple levels of experience, multiple levels of truth, multiple like meanings and discoveries. And when you read a poem, you might relearn something, but see in a different light. Or you might learn something brand new and say, I've never even thought about it that way. And poetry, it's meant to like help you transcend to a different experience, to a different place, to a different, honestly, to a different reality. I've read some poems that have made me laugh. I've read poems that have made me cry. I had one poem where I stopped. I shut my computer now, and I just like looked at. Remember, in my office, I look at myself because there's just a mirror right there. So I just looked at myself for a long time. But I just like thought, I'm like, that like moved me. So I love poetry. But something interesting happens. You take poetry, right, multiple like unending levels of truth and experience that help you transcend time, and then you put music to it. Music in and of itself does a similar thing, right? Like if you hear a song, it can take you back to like when you were like, for me, in 1993. It just takes me right back. I don't plan on going back there, but I hear Dookie by Green Day, right? And I'm like right there again. I'm like, oh, I'm so cool. That's, yeah, you guys, some of you guys get that. So, oh, by the way, Dookie's name of the album, not like actual, like, okay, I'm gonna make that clear. Like, Chris was a weird teenager, so what am I talking about? Music, right? So music can move you. But so if you just read, like I'm going to read you, if you just treated like a song, you read a poem, it just has literal truth, you're going to miss on this whole experience. For example, I'm going to read you words from one of my favorite songs. Here it goes. Ah. Oh. Say it now. I am back. 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 All right? I know. And you're like, oh, total multiple feelings. Right now, turn it up. It's a little different when James Brown says the same thing, right?
Yeah. I'm back. I'm back.
Two times.
I'm back.
This is what we need, this man. I want yes.
Get up,
oh. Oh, we should just keep that. Let's shut down church. Let's dance, all right? But even in that, right, there's like a feeling of the music, and James Brown's good enough, he could get up with no music and say, one, two, and I'd be like, you're my best friend, right? But there's something about the music that brings out like the soul of his voice and his song, and then it has a richer experience. So there's not just looking at lines. I was going to play What Does the Fox Say? I actually had it queued up, of like the words are dog goes woo, cat goes meow. I'm like, I can't even make a joke about that. That's just too, I'm not that desperate. So why are we talking about Dookie and James Brown and Wendell Berry and eating some trees, eating some peaches off some mighty fine trees? It's because this is the Psalms. The Psalms are these beautiful pieces of art. It is poetry that is meant, that was written, meant to be sung with music, either alone or as you're like out in the backyard or as you're walking or putting your kids to bed or in the synagogue in like their form of worship. It was meant to be sung and heard and repeated over and over. But it's interesting. It's easy as like us civilized, rational, fully developed brain people, all right, most of us, and we could read Psalms and we could take it as literal truth. And we look through it, scour through it, and say, okay, what truth? I want to know exactly what this truth is. And the author, the psalmist who wrote that, said, well, you're missing the plot, friend. Because it's not to go in there to have this, like, I'm going to have this discovery when I read Psalm 23. I have no needs. That's it. My needs are gone. Bible says that I believe it, right? Like, the psalmist is meant to bring you to a different place, to have these multiple layers of experience, of transcendence, of truth. Like, even when that poem that I read earlier, it's funny how, like, what you might experience from that poem and what stands out to me and what hits me, is we're going to have totally different experiences. You might think, this is kind of stupid. I don't like that poem. That's fine. And the same thing when read the Psalms. Like, I've been reading Psalm 23 and Psalm 45 over and over and over again for years. And it's not like I go into it like, oh, I already know this truth. Almost every time, something else is going to stand out to me because I am the one who is changing, right? I'm the one who's growing and evolving, and my needs are going to go up and down and all around. And so Psalms are meant to bring you to a different place, the same way as poetry and music. And here's the interesting part, that Psalms were written somewhere between like over a long space of time, from 1000 BC up to like 600 BC. And again, they would sing these by either putting their kids to bed. They would sing all these different songs with their friends and in community. And somewhere around 500 BC, someone thought, hey, you know what? I'm going to throw these all together in one book. And they're like, hey, do you remember that song that we learned from great grandma? Hey, do you remember that song that our crazy Uncle Al, remember when he used to sing, we're like, roll our eyes, like, yeah, okay, thanks, Al, right? And they put them all, so in the book of Psalms, this is not a chronological order. It's not some random order. There's actually five books in Psalms. And each book has its own theme, each book has its own like point and has its own rhythm, has its own beat. It's almost like its own genre. And why did they put them in order that way? And why at that time did they compile them all together? This is interesting. Because around 500 BC, actually 80 years before that, they went into captivity. Babylon came in and said, guess what? We're the bad guys. Or they thought they were the good guys, right? And they're like, hey, you belong to us now. And they took the Israelites and brought them into Babylon, and they were in exile. They were in captivity. And in those like 70, 80 years, like they're away from their home. Someone stripped them from their land, right? And said, no longer are you over here. Now you're over here. And this is what you're going to do. And you will do it. Like, you know, because remember us, like, boot on your throat? Yeah, that's us, Babylon. And in that time, there's going to be darkness. In that time, and this is like a normal rhythm, right, for these people of, like, have freedom and then captivity. Freedom and captivity. Well, we need a king. No, we don't. We need judges. No, we don't, right? It's going in and out of freedom, of slavery. All of a sudden, they enslave other people. And it's this cycle of brokenness. It's this cycle of pain. And again, it happens again. And in that time, they're singing songs. And the person who wrote this, because when they go back, they call post-exile in 500 BC, they're moving back to their homeland and they're going to rebuild the temple. And they're thinking, what songs are we going to sing? You can imagine that they're like, yeah, that one. Like I said, grandma sang, my mom sang when she put me to bed. I heard my dad sing that song when he was angry. When we lost our friend, we would sing this song. And they put them all together because there's something beautiful that happens when you sing songs. It moves you. There's something beautiful when you experience art, when you read poetry. It moves you and it connects you. So N.T. Wright, he says this. Oh, where am I at? The Psalms, right here. The Psalms offer us a way of joining a chorus of praise and pray that has been going on for millennia and across all cultures. These songs, these poems have connected people from generations to generations, and to this day, people are still singing them in their communities, in their spiritual communities. Why? Because it's meant to connect us to something deeper. I'm going to say it like 1,000 times. It's not just supposed to be read, oh, now I have memorized it, now it's in my head, in the old coconut. It's meant to be experienced and shared. And great poetry, great music, and this is N.T. Wright, I stole this 100%. I wish I could take the credit, and maybe I still will. But anyways, he says, great art will bring you to three different crossroads. And this helps us see the Psalms in a different way. Three crossroads. The first crossroad you come up against is going to be the crossroads of time. Like I shared earlier, you can hear a song and take you back to when you're a kid. If you played Yo-Yo Ma, I love Yo-Yo Ma. I can go right under my Christmas tree. My mom and dad got me my first cassette tape player. My mom found a Yo-Yo Ma tape and put it in there, and I'm underneath the tree crying, all right? Just a little kid, like, this is so beautiful, all right? So I hear Yo-Yo Ma, I'm like 9 years old again. If I hear The Doors, it's me and Alden Tibbs in his bedroom thinking that we're so cool in the 90s listening to The Doors. We're like, no one else knows this band, right? That's really what we thought. We're like, we're so woke. We're just amazing, right? Like if I hear, there's Rage Against the Machine when I was a teenager, and I thought, oh, I'm gonna go fight someone. Let's listen to it, right? And it's like music can just take you back, and also music can help you in time think, dream of something still to come. Second crossroads. So there's time, and then there's space. If you walk into a cathedral, those beautiful cathedrals, like you can't in one moment, in one space, capture all of the heavens, all of the beauty in the skies. But they built these cathedrals to represent a smaller space of this vast, huge experience called the skies. And when you'd sing and you look at the art and you look up and say, "This, I'm a part of something bigger in this little space that goes to a bigger space." Art can move you. And then my favorite one that he talks about is matter. Like when we sing, like today, my wife was singing some beautiful music. We are using our physical bodies. We are moving, we are breathing, and we are singing in unison together. And we don't do it just because it's just like Christian karaoke hour. That's not why we do worship. We do it because as a group, we're saying, this is who we are. As a group, we are saying, you are so incredibly good, God, that you're a good, good Father. And when you breathe together and we move together, it unites us, you see? We use our bodies when we pray. It transcends time, space, and even like our physical bodies. And this is what the Psalms were meant to do, to connect people to something deeper. And so where we start today, and we're going to be going through the Psalms all the month of July, and where we start is Psalm 1. Because Psalm 1, the psalmist, the author of this, did this on purpose. Because it's like the headline. It's like he said this psalm can be true for every other thing that's about to happen in Psalms. He starts it with, let me remind you again who you are. Psalm 1. Blessed is the one who does not walk in step with the wicked, or stand in the way that sinners take, or sit in the company of mockers, but whose delight is in the law of the Lord, and who meditates on his law day and night. That person is like a tree planted by streams of water, which yields its fruit in season and whose leaf does not wither. Whatever they do prospers, but not so the wicked. They are like chaff that the wind blows away. Therefore, the wicked will not stand in the judgment, nor sinners in the assembly of the righteous. For the Lord watches over the way of the righteous, but the way of the wicked leads to destruction. Like Psalms, like I said earlier, meant to be sung or said out loud. So I'm in my office today. I made sure I was the only one in the office, and I sang in my own rhythm, right, Psalm 1, and it was super weird. I won't lie. As I'm singing, I'm like, am I really doing this? But in the middle of it, I caught myself, because if you read something or then you say it out loud, you experience it. And if you sing it, you're going to like laugh at yourself, right? And you're going to experience it in a different way. But it's meant to be experienced. And so we're going to like break down, and hopefully we can have a couple of different discoveries here. But where he starts, the psalmist starts with saying, blessed is the woman. You can change up man to woman. Blessed is the kid. Blessed is the parent. Blessed is the boss. Blessed is the neighbor. Blessed is the human. Blessed is the man. And all the psalms, all these truths, all this wisdom, all this full human experience starts with, you can be blessed. And this is important. Because the way you view God matters. We talk about this all the time. If you have this picture of God who's angry, this picture of God who's always on the move, who's always just like the distant dad, just like, oh yeah, I'll be there, we'll play that game later. You can never catch up, you can never do enough, then you're never going to be blessed. You're always just going to get good enough. Here we have a God, again, who's pointing back to Genesis 1 of saying, who I am is good and what I do is bless always. Who we are as followers of Jesus, people who bless again and again and again and again and again. So the author again is saying, let me remind you of who you are. You can be blessed. And then how do you get that blessing? First, he starts by how you don't get that blessing, which is interesting, right? And in this poetry, they're going to say, like, in the Psalms, they're going to say pretty much the same thing two or three times, but in slightly different versions, and it happens here again. Because he says, those who sit with the wicked, or what does it say? They step with the wicked, stand the way sinners take, or sit in the company of mockers. So if you took this literally, you'd be saying, you'd get ready to sit down and be like, all right, anyone here a mocker? Because I can't sit with mockers. If you're a mocker, think, I want to be blessed, and I can't be blessed if I'm sitting with mockers. So no mocking, right? Or if you're walking, you're like, are you a sinner? Don't walk with me if you're a sinner. Get out of here. Because if you took it as literal truth, right, you want to make sure you're blessed. And so I can only stand with the right people. I can't sit with the wrong people, which goes very against like who Jesus was, right? And we have a Jesus-looking God. What the psalmist is trying to do is trying to show in the totality of what this word wicked means. It means everywhere they go, they are immersed in this way of life. And what is the wicked life that we see in Proverbs? It's, I'm number one. If God is saying, blessed is the person that we always bless, we always give, the wicked are people who only look out for themselves. And they're totally immersed in it. Have you ever run into someone like this before? Ever met someone who's like never happy? Like everything's the worst. They're never content. Even when you actually deliver what they ask for, they find some way to say, you wish you would have got me the purple one, right? Like, if you're around these people, they're miserable all the time. Why? Did they grow up saying, hey, I can't wait till like I'm 60 and I resent the whole world? That would be really great. All right? Sign me up. No, what happens is when you are focused only on yourself, you'll never, ever get what you're looking for. Which leads you to what? Angry all the time, disappointed all the time. And it's never you're the problem. It's always somewhere else, something else, and someone else is the problem. What the psalmist is doing is saying when you are immersed in when you are self-absorbed with yourself, then you're never really going to get what you want. That's not the blessed life. But then he goes on to say, so that's where he starts. Then he goes on to say, but blessed is the one, blessed is the woman who loves the law and who meditates it on day and night. Who loves the law. This is an interesting word. They bring this up again and again, especially in Proverbs. They talk about how you're supposed to love the law. And what they're getting at here is meditating on it isn't like, okay, I'm going to take out my study Bible and I'm going to take 15 minutes and I'm going to learn these Greek words and these Hebrew words and then I'm going to like have this like mental ascent and have my truth. That's good. Keep doing that. But that's not what he's getting at. He's saying, like, jump into the stream, jump into this water, and let every square inch of this law immerse every part of you. One commentator talked on that the love of the law was not knowing it. Was not knowing it, it was doing it. And even when you were confused, even though you didn't understand all of it, the love of the law means I'm going to do everything I can to try to do it, to obey. And what is the law? This is like Paul talks about this in Galatians over and over again. What is the purpose of the law? What is the law? So let's take part of it, right? Because this is good. I love this stuff. If you take the Ten Commandments, why did we get the Ten Commandments? Was it so we could like put them up in a courtroom and say, all right, here's all the things you're not supposed to do. Don't kill anyone. Like, don't steal if you're your neighbor. Okay, we're good, right? If it was that simple, then I think it'd be a little more simpler today. So why did God give them the Ten Commandments? Have you ever been in a toxic relationship? You ever been like in a, like maybe you were dating someone or married to someone where they manipulated and controlled you? Maybe you were part of like a very unhealthy circle of friends. Or maybe, imagine this, maybe part of a spiritual community that was really unhealthy. When you get out of those relationships, sometimes you need someone who's healthy, someone who's a little bit different. When you come to them saying, I'm a horrible piece of garbage, I'll never be enough, I can never be good enough, I'm always going to be fat, I'm always going to be a loser, I'll never succeed. You need someone to like pause you. Good friends will pause you and say, that's not true. And they redirect you to the truth. And they have to remind, let me remind you who you are, that you are loved, that you have value, that you are worth it. You can do hard things. You need to hear that. This is what God is doing. He takes the Ten Commandments, gives it to Moses, and he says, go remind them who they are. Because in this, they came out of, again, imagine this, slavery, and who they were was beaten, who they were was oppressed, their way of life was saying, you don't get to do that anymore. And they took it and got beaten again and again and again and again. And now God saves them, it comes out of it, and he says, that's not who you are anymore. Take the one, thou shalt not kill, right? That's a good one, that's a good one. But is God trying to tell them, just don't kill people? Like, what's underneath it? Because in that time, that culture, killing people, warmongering, this is what they experienced. This is the only thing they knew when they were in slavery. If you mess up, if you're a power, you're gone, you're dead. If you're a threat, see you later. God is saying, we're not going to play that game. Why? What's underneath don't murder? Let me remind you who you are. We're a people who always love the other. Do you see it? How we're not going to covet my neighbor's stuff. Why? Because we're going to celebrate the other. We want the other to flourish and to thrive. And we can trust that God is good enough. He'll give me what I need. Underneath the Ten Commandments is this vast, beautiful opportunity to see the living God. This is what the psalmist is saying. Love the law. Don't love not murdering people. That'd be a weird thing to love, right? I really love not murdering people. But do you see how, if you read this literally, that's where you can just arrive to a fact? Instead of meditating, immerse yourself in this beauty, in this truth, because there's multiple levels of truth, multiple levels of learning. And then he goes on to the roots. So he says the same thing now, right? You're immersed of like the wicked and the totality and the blessed and the totality of love. Then he goes into this description of this tree by streams of water. Not a tree in the middle of a field, not a tree in a swamp, but a tree where it has constant access to life-giving resources. Whenever it needs it, it is radically available. Then he says, because of that life-giving water, then you can bear fruit in season. And I've never thought about this before. He uses the words, you bear fruit in season and your leaves will not wither. That means you're going to produce fruit in season, which is implying there's going to be other seasons where you're not producing fruit. How does one produce fruit? Has to be winter. Has to be a spring, and summer, and fall. And each season, it's going to produce different things. And if you were just to take a, like, if you just were going to meditate just on this, what we all want to produce fruit 100% of the time, right? Because that's the best part. When good things come out of your life and you're doing great things, like yesterday, I had this day where like everything just went perfect. It was like every interaction with my kids were wonderful. I'm looking at the leaves and I'm like, am I the only one who sees this leaf right now? I'm having like these moments of just like, this is amazing. And then today I woke up thinking it was going to be the same thing and it wasn't, right? I want every day to be like that. But that's not the human experience. That's not real life. But that's not a threat. To not be bearing fruit is not a threat. It means that you can be holy when you're confused. You can be holy. The holy life is when there's anger. The holy life is when you're bored. The holy life can be when you're in suffering or you're in pain. The holy life can be when you're laughing with your friends. The holy life is when you could be lonely. See, there's going to be different seasons in your life. And what the psalm is saying, but if you are connected to this good and beautiful God, then you are blessed. Because blessed is not like endorphins in your head. Blessed is a state of being, not just emotions. Emotions will come and go. Seasons will come and go. But when you are connected, when you are with the living God, then you are blessed. Tim Keller, who's a pastor and author, says this. Happiness, it's based on what you are, not on your circumstances. If you seek it in your circumstances, you will always be unhappy. If you're looking for happiness in a thing, in an object, in a person, in an event, in a vacation, you'll never have it because it's never enough. I don't know if anyone else is like this, but when I get to like a party, when I get to like a dinner party, or I even get to like vacation's coming up for me, I love vacation. And when I get into vacation, like 3 days into vacation, I'm already thinking about like our next vacation. Anyone else? It's like I have a hard time just even being in the moment. I'm like, oh, I'll be happy when I get this. I'll be happy when I do this. And in the moment, I'm like, oh, I want to do something else. And when you do that, you'll never experience happiness. If your happiness bases on circumstances instead of being who you are, that you're connected. And the psalmist wraps up. He says the exact opposite, right? He takes the wicked and how you're immersed in it and how you're blessed, you're immersed in it. Then he takes the tree and he ends with, and the wicked is like chaff that's blown away. Like when the wind blows, poof, you're gone. Where a tree with its roots deep can weather all seasons. And I thought about this. I meditated on this week of like, I wonder if that's true for me. Because the psalmist isn't saying like there's only two speeds, like good, blessed, and wicked, right? It's not like you're good all the time or you're wicked all the time. There's going to be moments of where I'm going to be self-absorbed. Imagine that, right? There's going to be times where I want to get my way before someone else. There's going to be times where I'm going to suffer for someone else and give them love. But when you live and move in this way, when you think in this way of I am number one, when something disrupts you, when something gets in the way of your pleasure, something gets in the way of your time, someone gets in the way of your privilege, someone gets in the way of your power, you do what? You blow up. For example, if you have young kids and you have taken the brave risk of leaving your house to eat at a restaurant, right? If you have kids and you've done this, and your four-year-old gets up and moves out and starts picking its nose and like rubbing it on the mirror and then starts singing songs like poopy pants, right? If you're anything like me, I get like the really loud whisper because I think no one else can hear it. I'm like, you sit down now. Get over here. No one can hear me except you, right? Get over here. And why do you have these moments? Why do you get angry? It's like we're trying to, like, no one else knows. I have to trick everyone else to know that they won't realize that my kid does not have a fully developed brain, right? I must hide that secret that they're not an adult, right? But it feels like a threat, doesn't it? Joking aside, there's times it absolutely feels like your world is coming apart. And why is that? Because you are like chaff or being blown away. You want to be a perfect parent. You want the world to know how great of a mom or a dad you are, and when real life happens, it undoes you. So if you meditate on that, where do you get undone? Last week I shared a story about how someone cut me off in traffic and I lost it. Remember that? Like, why was I undone? Because someone got in my way and I was late to get home to do nothing, right? Isn't that the truth? I was not bleeding out from my like my body, like, I'm going to get to the hospital, right? It was like, I have to go home and just sit more. But if you could take a moment, see what the Psalms are doing here? They're repeating again and again what grounds you. Where do you get your value? Where do you get your purpose? Where do you get your joy? Where do you get your peace? Because the Psalms goes through, every different Psalm is going to take you through the full human experience, from violence to rage. There's one part where the Babylonians tell them, hey, sing this song, play this. And the psalmist writes and say, how can we sing when you've taken us away? There's despair. There's one whole book called the Hallelujah Book where it's just like fist pumps the whole time, right? There's justice. And my encouragement to you, this is my encouragement. Like, take time this week. I'd encourage you to try doing it once a day. And you pick what psalms you want and read one psalm out loud. Or if you're brave enough, sing it, right? Blessed is the man. That's how I sang it too. I sang it like I was a choir boy. I don't know why I did that. Oh, I never sing like that. But when you're singing the Bible, you just like, oh, that's how you're supposed to sing when you have the Bible, right? So either sing it, but read it out loud. And when you're done, think about it. Be stopped. Be still. And just receive it. Allow your mind, allow your heart, the same way when you hear music and it sweeps you away, allow yourself to get lost in that song. And don't make yourself say, oh, I'm going to arrive at this point. Just say, whatever I am is what I am. And wherever I go is where I go. And when you do that, The triune God, Father, Son, and Spirit, will arrive at your doorstep. It will arrive in your heart, and you'll experience beauty and unending levels of truth. Let's stand. Please join me. So God, we love you. I thank you that we are blessed. And that blessing, that blessing does not come because of what I produce. My blessing is not moved at how I look or how I even act. My blessing comes for how good you are and how faithful you are and how loving you are and how beautiful you are. So with my friends here today, my friends on the podcast, we just say again, we are connected to you. And even the idea of, like, it says the blessed is the person who's planted. It evokes that there's this something, this being, this divine that has taken us and planted us where it's life. God, will you move us again? Will you plant us in a life-giving resource? Will heaven itself just wash over us? And I pray for my friends here today who are experiencing pain, who feel like they're not as grounded. Something happened in their life where they got blown away. They found that we're not grounded, maybe in anger, maybe in a sickness, finances, relationships. God, will you come and plant us again? Thank you for being good. Amen. So I'm going to invite our ministry team to make their way up. And there's two things I'm going to invite you to. And we take time to pray for one another because, I don't know about you, but life is way better when we do it together. And there's times where we just need a friend. We need a partner, someone to stand with us and who can pray with you. That's what these people up here are going to be doing. You can come get prayer for anything you'd like. We're going to worship for a little bit more. But the two things that I felt highlighted to me was this. you're striving for happiness, but you can never get it. You think that job, that raise, that kid, that relationship, whatever it might be, and you just got dialed up of like, yeah, I'm totally looking for happiness, and you need to be connected. And the second thing is you feel like you're not grounded. You feel like you're getting, like, something is happening in your life, and you're blowing up, and you're ready to be done. You want to move away from that. Man, the people up here would love nothing more than to pray for you. Have a great holiday week, and thank you for coming to the Vineyard.